As a child, Otha Ellis Bates McDaniel taught himself to play guitar, but he never found one he liked, so he built his own. Soon after, his rectangular-shaped axe with an old TV dial for a volume knob could be heard on radios everywhere as he launched the beat heard round the world. He was Bo Diddley. His handmade guitar is at the Hard Rock Cafe in Times Square. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history are at Hard Rock Cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com. Told it to buy, baby, diamond ring.
And now, Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
You got the Mighty Manfred with you here in Little Steven's Underground Garage for another Coolest Conversations throwback. Please remember to follow, subscribe, rate, and review. The Wayback Machine has brought us to Friday, June the 9th, 2017, when I spoke with Lydia Knight, frontwoman in the Los Angeles-based band The Regrets. We talk about how she and her bandmates met at the School of Rock, how music has always filled her household, her first heartbreak, how it inspired the band's debut album Feel Your Feelings Fool, thoughts on gender stereotypes and social media. Our coolest song in the world at the time was I Don't Like You. So let's hear some of that first, followed by my interview with Lydia Knight on your Coolest Conversations throwback, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Lydia Knight from The Regrets on the line with me for today's Coolest Conversations. Hello, Lydia.
Hi.
Hey, now I was told that you met all of your bandmates at the School of Rock. When was that? And what was the curriculum going on?
True. That was about, I want to say, three, four years ago, around there. Well, they have different performance programs. Like, they kind of set it up in semesters, I guess you could say, and they have, like, say they have three different performance programs you can choose to be a part of. So one will be a Led Zeppelin show, and one will be the White Stripes show, and then another one will be, like, girl groups. And so they're all different, and you pick which one you want to be a part of, and then you rehearse songs with a group of other kids for a few months, and then there's like a show at the end, and during that time you're also taking lessons individually, and it's super cool.
You guys didn't form a band at that time, you just met the rest of these people.
No.
Right. And so did you meet them all in the girl group section, or what were they doing, and how did you meet them in the School of Rock?
I know I met Sage in the Motown show, and I think I also met Max in the Motown show. I don't think Janessa was a part of that. I think I met Janessa in a new wave show I did, like, next. I was only there for about a year, and they had all been there for much longer. And yeah, I had the biggest crush on Max. I remember that.
So, but you were already playing music before you signed up for that or enrolled in that. How old were you when you started to play?
I was six. I got my first guitar for my sixth birthday and started lessons the next day.
Wow. Now, your parents, my understanding is your parents are not musicians. Is that correct?
They aren't. They're super big music heads. Like, they're very educated, you could say, when it comes to music and different time periods the music from those time periods, but they both don't really play anything. My mom actually used to write like metal music and sing metal music just kind of for fun.
What accounts for you being the musician in the family?
I think that I grew up with, there's music always playing in our house, and my parents like to say that they brainwashed me to have good taste in music. And I saw when I was 5 years old, my dad took me to Madonna's concert, and it just changed the way that I looked at music, and was like, I have to do that. That's what I need to be doing. So that's what I did.
Well, let me ask you this. If, let's say, if your parents didn't have such a great taste in music, can you see yourself as having pursued something different? Like, for instance, if they were librarians, do you think you'd be writing books or poetry instead of playing music?
That's a really good question. I want to say no, because I've done a lot of, when I was younger, I was constantly doing like after school activities, and I've done so many different weird things. Like, I did karate for a long time. I did figure skating for a long time. I did dance. Like, I've done so many different things, but music is the only thing that really stuck. So I want to say it's just a part of me, I guess you could say. It sounds ridiculously cheesy, but it's also, but that could also be, an argument could be made that that's a part of me because from such a young age, it was kind of ingrained in me. So I don't really know. That's interesting.
Well, I was reading, let's see, that you truly fell in love for the first time as you were working on the album, Feel Your Feelings Fool, the exclamation point.
Yeah.
And I was going to ask you about that. Then I came across this, like an article that said that you had since broken up. So instead, I want to ask, how did feeling your feelings go with all that, first love and breakup?
Crazy. Just so many crazy feelings that I had never felt in my life, and really way harder than I ever thought it would be. I never thought that literally when we broke up, like you physically feel, or at least I did, like I physically felt sick for a long time, and it was really tricky to like stay put together and to not cry constantly for at least like a week. I'm really happy now, and that was a while ago, and I really, in that moment, I did not think I would get over it. Like, I thought that it was going to be at least a year or something, because I was just like, with your first love, and it's something that I say get over kind of, you know, loosely, like it's something that I'll always have a special place in my heart for that person, and I'll always like love that person in a certain way, but get over to the point where I don't, you know, I don't want to be with them at all. So for anyone that's, you know, going through a breakup, just remember that it does get better. Like, it really does. And that's something that everyone was telling me while I was going through it. And I just, like, there was no light at the end of the tunnel in my perspective, but, you know, it got better.
Well, you know, I have a band, and in that band, everybody contributes songwriting. We always look forward to our drummer for his next relationship, because we know that it will inevitably end, and then we're going to get some great songs out of it.
That's so funny.
You don't want to enter into a relationship with the idea that things aren't going to work out. But to be honest, it can be a creative wellspring, because you have to deal with these emotions. And as you said, you know, you have to move forward. Great. Has it been a positive thing, creative-wise?
Yeah, that's the one thing. I remember when that happened, I was like, well, you know, whatever, like I can write about this. And it really did help me, as it helps me with everything that happens in my life. Yeah.
Well, the opening, so you got the next album lined up, but let's talk about the more recent one, Feel Your Feelings Fool, because the opening song on there, I Don't Like You, that's our coolest song in the world this week. Is there any one event that inspired that song?
I used to, when I started high school, I went through a period of time where I just had a bunch of like little crushes. And then the second that someone started to show interest back, I was just super over it. And that was kind of specifically about this one boy named Jacob that I liked and had a little thing with and just stopped liking. But it really was about all of those people, but I wrote it in that time period.
Well, you know, another fun song on the album to me, fun tune, Juice Box Baby. Are you a Trader Joe's Juice Box? Is that like your first choice? Or when you go for a Juice Box, what's your favorite flavor?
Literally the Trader Joe's Apple Juice Box is the best.
Yeah, you know, I think I might even have a couple of those left myself. And the song Ladylike, What a Bitch, makes me want to ask you about your family life. Seems to be pretty great. You know, your parents seem to be very supportive, and certainly they provided us a frame of reference for the music. But listening to that song, you know, the lyrics are pretty cool. You know, cleaning floors and cleaning pores. Do you feel pressure, though, or is there some societal pressure to feel like you need to grow up and get hitched to a guy and clean floors and pores? Or
yeah, I definitely don't feel that way with my family, but I think those kind of gender roles are just something that's ingrained in society, whether, you know, living in Los Angeles and being a teenage girl is very different than, you know, being a young girl in a lot of other places in America and the world. And I think I feel super, super lucky to not be raised in a way where, you know, marriage is what I aspire to be a part of when I'm older, and that's the only thing I aspire. You know, like a lot of people are raised, like you said, to get hitched. Like, it's a very, I don't know, I see, and even in Los Angeles, I see some families that they put their kids into boxes, kind of, and that sort of, I'm trying to remember when I wrote that, because I wrote What a Bitch before, and I wrote that, I think it was after watching something, I want to say. Oh, it was after Lemonade came out, and I watched the, like, Lemonade movie, and I listened to Lemonade nonstop, and she talks a lot about, like, trying to be softer and trying to be pretty and trying to be all of these things, you know, to keep her husband, pretty much. And I thought that was really interesting. And I thought it was really cool that she was talking about that. And it was super inspiring to me. And so I was like, oh, shit, I want to write about that. Oh, whoops, I'm not supposed to curse him.
That's okay. Hey, you know, so my daughter is 15, and that's why we still have juice boxes laying around, you know, daughter's 15. And I'd like her to listen to your album, because I feel like a lot of the stuff you write about, you know, it's from your perspective, that age, songs like A Living Human Girl and Picture Perfect, and she certainly could relate to. But often, not always, but often, a surefire way to get her to not give something a chance is for me to present it as something I think she might like, right? Because that's kind of becomes a case, right? So, Lydia, how do you suggest I get her to give you guys a shot, to give you guys a listen? What's the best way?
I think if she hears it, she'll like it. But I think that, like you said, it's hard for any teenage girl to listen to a suggestion from her dad.
So how did your dad get you to listen to things? So,
well, like I said, everything, music is just always playing in the house. Oh. He has an online radio station that he would just, that he like programs all the music for. So it's just always playing in the car or in the house, unless it's Sirius XM. But usually in the house, that's what he's playing. And I used to, when I was younger, I would get annoyed by it because I just want to listen to my music. And he was always he's super picky and was like, nope, we're listening to mine. Like, but then eventually now I'll hear songs and I'm like, wait, why do I know this song? And my dad will always be like, because I brainwashed you, like, when you were younger. Like, so yeah, it was honestly kind of a trick.
Well, I can't say I've been as successful as your father, but yeah, we do have a jukebox and do play things, and it is pretty cool. A neat moment when she can reference those things, you know, later on. And that's pretty neat. You know, cool. So another cool tune I mentioned here, I guess a second ago, you know, Picture Perfect. And that the bit in there, the baby, made me think of King Coleman's Boo Boo song. Ever heard of King Coleman?
No. Well, I've heard of King Coleman, but I don't know what that song is.
Well, that's one to check out. I encourage you to do that. And
I probably, I will.
Here are a couple of quotes I wanted to ask you. Let me read this quote and I want to ask you about it. The two of them. Okay. Let's see. The first one, I feel like everyone in this generation right now is in denial about their feelings and about who they are and what they like and what they don't like. And then the other quote is, everybody's just kind of really scared to be honest and to be open and to be different and original, especially with our youth and people my age and people in high school, the people I'm surrounded by. People are scared to have real feelings and to actually be affected by certain things. So my question is, is that not being in touch with one's feelings, do you think that's really a generational thing or is that just a life experience thing?
I don't know. In the first quote, I did say this generation, and I do think that a lot of it has to do, or at least a lot of, like, it's growing because of social media, and I want to say that for sure, but I can't because of the fact that I'm in it, and I don't know, you know, how it was for other generations when they were my age or whatever, but I do think that there's this huge, weird kind of secrecy when it comes to having feelings. And I think that both genders have to face that in different ways. I think guys, a lot of times, and this is, I think, always been something, but, you know, guys are very scared of being vulnerable a lot of the time because of those gender roles I was talking about earlier.
Right.
And I think girls are portrayed a lot of times in, you know, film and television as being kind of crazy. Especially like girlfriends, like there's that whole crazy girlfriend stereotype. And so girls don't want to seem crazy, so they let people walk all over them a lot of times. And I used to do the same thing. And also with Instagram, a lot of times people know, especially in Los Angeles, I think, and big cities like this, I'm sure it's similar in other places, but I know especially here, there's this weird like thing with Instagram, and with, if you have more followers, a lot of times you are more confident, or you get more confident for a short amount of time, because when you post a picture, like, that instant gratification kicks in and it's like a great feeling for a little bit, and then it kind of goes away. And I think a lot of people rely on it for instant gratification. Me sometimes, you know, being one of them. And it's weird to have that, like, platform. And it's amazing for a lot of reasons. But it's also kind of, it can be kind of detrimental, I think.
That's a good point you make about the social media things and the instant gratification. I'm kind of totally not. You know, I don't have an Instagram account. I don't have a smartphone.
Yeah.
Now, you guys are getting ready to go out on the road, kicking things off June the 11th at Pub Rock in Phoenix. And then you head to Austin and Dallas and Nashville and Atlanta, other dates. Are you touring in June because you're out of school then?
I'm actually homeschooled, so it doesn't really affect when we tour.
What about the other members?
I think they're all out of school now, officially. Max just graduated. And I'll be done actually really soon because I'm pretty ahead since I'm doing like an independent study program. So that doesn't really affect when we go out.
So a buddy of mine is in Atlanta and said that you guys had canceled a show there earlier. Is this going back to Atlanta part of a makeup gig?
Well, it started, I think, as like we wanted to revisit. We canceled quite a few shows on this last tour because I was having some like vocal health issues. And so we had to, but so it started as wanting to go back to those places and then it kind of grew.
So how many shows have you played out of town?
I don't know. Well, we did a lot at South By, and we've played quite a bit everywhere else, but I'm going to count those because I really want to know. Actually, Janessa yesterday told me that the other day she printed out like a blank map of the world and has been coloring in each state that we've been to, and I want to do that.
That's actually, I think that is cool. I've often wanted to put up like a map with little pins in the cities, you know. So the reason I ask that is, do you still feel excited to go out and do these shows on the road? Because there's a lot of hurry up and wait in that. Does it still seem exciting? Or is it like, well,
yeah,
you know, this is a routine?
It's so exciting because I'm like home and I want to not be, because I'm just, it starts to feel normal and I miss it so much. And it's just really what it is it's like, especially right now, we've been on a little break. Like, we haven't been playing shows and we haven't been rehearsing much here because I'm just like healing. And yeah, I'm just trying to get ready for this next tour. And it's just so like, I miss that release of feelings and energy in shows and in playing. And I just, oh my God, even thinking about it, like, I'm just so excited.
Cool. Well, I want us to take a listen to another song off of Feel Your Feelings, Fool. And that one is Hey Now. So what can you tell us about Hey Now?
Hey Now is like your typical lovey-dovey kind of cheesy song, but it embraces its cheesiness, I think. And because sometimes you just feel kind of silly and kind of corny and stupid, and that's what the song's about. And it's about like not knowing. It's like when you start having a crush on someone and you just really don't know how to go about it or how to handle it, and it's kind of, it takes over your brain. And it just, yeah, like, it's just, it's such a weird, exciting, but also like miserable feeling.
Well, you know, you're talking to a big lump of cheddar right now, and I love the song, cheesy stuff. Yeah, you know, I think cheesy things are fun, and I love the video that you guys made for it. Whose concept was the video,
Thank you. The Dickie Show?
It
was kind of a collaboration. My dad directed it, but I, like, we had been talking for a while because I wanted to make a video that was reminiscent of 60s or 50s, like, old dance show.
Yeah.
Kind of similar to the original Hairspray and, like, Bandstand, sort of.
Right.
And so that's where that came from. And then he came up with Dick Dickie and the whole, you know, he wrote it. But yeah, it was just super important to me to not gloss over that and to not sugarcoat that time period. And so that's why we kind of felt it was our responsibility to address like some of the issues that were happening then and are still happening now. And that was kind of the point, is to shine a light on that.
Right. Well, I agree with all that. And, you know, in the video, you got the black kids are outside and the things are get kind of carried away. They're let in and Dickie's carried off. What do the kids do with Dickie when they carry him out of the frame? What's happening to Dickie there at the end?
They're carrying him out and then they beat him senseless. And they scare him into being a better person.
Does he become a better person? I hope so.
Yes. They scare him into it.
So you mentioned about, you know, wanting to shine a light of that time period, not want to sugarcoat it. So if in the 50s, rock and roll is breaking down racial barriers, and in the 60s, it contributed to the anti-war movement, should today's music be doing something now? And what is it should be doing?
Hell yeah. I think it should be... I think over, like, more than anything, it should be creating kind of an escape for people or a safe place. Because I know that, you know, so many people that love music, me being one, like, use it as something just to give you hope and to, you know, give you a reason to keep going and keep fighting, because you have, I don't know, I can't even explain like what it is, but it's just so rewarding. And I think, you know, right now with the shit show that's going on in the world, and especially in this country, like, it's just really important for musicians to create that safe space for their fans and people that love music, and to make sure that their shows are like a hate-free zone and are a fun and, you know, safe environment.
Got to make sure those shows are Dickie Dick free.
Oh, yeah.
And so music for you, you mentioned, is like creating a safe space. So going forward in like 10 years from now, how old would you be in 10 years? Like 26 maybe or 27? How old would we be in 10 years?
Yeah, 26.
So do you envision continuing forward with music as a band or as wanting to do a solo thing? Or if you couldn't do the band, what will you be doing?
I would either start a new band or go solo because there's no way that I would stop playing music.
Well, Lydia, thank you so much for chatting with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Thank you.
Good. Well, thank you. Good luck with the upcoming tour and continued success with the album. And speaking of album.
Thank you.
Let's remind everybody it's called Feel Your Feelings, Fool, with an exclamation point there.
Yeah.
And off of that, we're going to take a listen to Hey Now. It's the Regrets and Little Steven's Underground Garage.
What's your name? You're really cute and really nice. I think we should go on a date. Oh, hey now, you got it good on. Hey now, you're like my favorite song. Hey now, what's your birthday? Because I read in a book that my most compatible mother's made. Oh, hey now, do you like my dress? Hey now, cause early you're
As a child, Otha Ellis Bates McDaniel taught himself to play guitar, but he never found one he liked, so he built his own. Soon after, his rectangular-shaped axe with an old TV dial for a volume knob could be heard on radios everywhere as he launched the beat heard round the world. He was Bo Diddley. His handmade guitar is at the Hard Rock Cafe in Times Square. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history are at Hard Rock Cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Told it in the side, baby, diamond ring.